Okay, it's Paul Nixon, and today I'm with Adrian Day. And today we're talking about how companies should go about expressing their brand online. So, Adrian, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, hi. I'm Adrian Day. I'm an independent brand consultant. I've had 25 years in brand consultancy, working with the likes of Landor and Siegel & Gale and Uffendel. Worked on some big branding projects for firms like BA and BP and Barclays, and also with not-for-profit and public sector companies and indeed some very small organisations. So I'm now a freelance branding consultant, and I'm particularly interested in this area of how brands, particularly corporate brands, express themselves online, not just through the website, but also social media. And I think it's a sort of emerging area, and I think there's some very sort of interesting cross-currents going on.
So let's start at the beginning and consider the sort of different approaches that companies can take. Where they might start.
Yes, I mean, I think the start point, my sort of simple answer to that is there really is only one approach, and that's reflecting the brand, and let's define that as the positioning, the proposition, and the personality. The expression, just to get some definitions out of the way, the expression is how that positioning, proposition, and personality is then expressed verbally and visually through all applications. So how is the brand expressed through the online applications? And I think there's only one way of doing that, and that is to express the positioning, proposition, and personality. I think anything less than that won't work. So if the view is that, well, our corporate brand, and this really applies where the company is the same as the brand. So Apple would be an example, McDonald's is an example, Ford is an example. Most financial services firms, that's the example, that would be the case. So if the company is the corporate brand, then essentially the website is an expression of that brand. It's not an area of the website that should be dedicated to brand. It's not part of it.
Through design, through tone of voice, through imagery.
Exactly. Absolutely. Design, tone of voice, imagery, functionality. I think the experience, and one of the parallels I use, and we'll come on to it later, is you look at the way retailers express their brand through their retail outlet. It is how it looks. It's how it feels. It's also how the staff engage with you. And a lot of it's in the detail. And I think there are some parallels that can be drawn when we're thinking about websites and other online presence.
So if you don't go about doing it, if you don't actually do this step and don't apply your character, and say your website comes out quite flat and, dare we say, boring, people will perceive you as flat and boring.
Absolutely. I mean, you make a good point there. One of the assumptions is that a company has a clearly defined, relevant, appealing, and engaging brand in the first place, and that's not always the case. And we'll come on to some business-to-business brands later, which they may be fine organisations, but to what extent they've really defined their brand, I'm not clear. So if you are an Apple or a Virgin or a John Lewis, it's going to be a lot easier to express your brand clearly through your website than if you are an organisation that doesn't have a clear sense of self. So I would back up to the brand definition in the first place. Firms have to have a clearly defined brand and a clearly defined sense of self. Then it is much easier to express it. If they don't have that clearly defined brand, then they're up against it from day one.
And do you think that people should have a brand section on their website where they actually state that brand definition, that brand identity, and the brand promise? Because quite often users benefit from the subtle slap around the face saying, this is what we are.
Yes. I think that is a good idea. I think providing that the website reflects the brand and other online presence reflects the brand, then also having a sort of clear brand section, this defining it, the proposition, the personality, the values, is useful, particularly useful for the likes of me when we're going through assessing websites, because you kind of know what you're assessing against. And as I went through looking at websites for this exercise, I didn't always know what the brand was about, and I couldn't find it on the website. So I think it's useful. Of course, it's also useful for other organisations that are helping that company. If you are a supplier and you know that the brand values are about honesty, trustworthiness, openness, etc., then providing the company behaves in line with that brand, you kind of know what to expect. And it's the same for all stakeholders, for employees, for shareholders, etc. So, and of course, the other part of a typical brand area might be actually some expression tools. So there might be some visual guidelines, there might be a tone of voice guidelines. More often than not, they're on the intranet so that employees can use them. But I think it's quite enlightened to have some sort of external facing tools so that if a journalist is using your logo, then they're more likely to get it right if they've got the online tools there to use, the online assets.
So how much, when you work with companies, do you vet, if you like, their content and push it back, saying, no, that's not right? Or do you think just by having done the necessary tone of voice or the image guidelines, that generally people are good at following them and applying them?
Yes, I mean, it's interesting. I think there's, and I've looked at a range of sites, those organisations that really understand their customer and are used to engaging with their customer are better at translating their brand into the online community. So if you look at John Lewis, Tesco and Iceland, as I did, each one of the brand experiences delivered by those websites is in line with what I would expect knowing about those brands. So so the John Lewis website is, and if you've been in any of their stores or shopped there, this won't be a surprise. It's clean, clear, it has a sort of maturity about it, it's well ordered, just like the shop. There's an intelligence about it. It's stylish without being flashy or showy. It's cool and fairly calm, so that it's not aggressive selling. It's intelligent selling. They've got a bestseller's rating for many of the products, and they make this clear commitment to advice as well as never knowingly undersold, their famous line. It's also well organized, like the shops. So what I like about John Lewis is the fact that the online experience replicates the offline experience and everything you'd expect about the brand. And I think that's true as you go through different sectors, that, and perhaps it's not surprising, that those organisations that regularly face customers have perhaps made a bit more effort. Iceland, I was fascinated by.
Especially the dark years section.
Yes, no, that was fascinating. I mean, I think that for a... Too many sites are lost in corporate management speak, which of course is not branded because it's interchangeable, it's generic. But Iceland now, as I understand it, ran by the chap who originally founded it, who went away and came back again. Absolutely. I mean, firstly, it is very much like the store. There's an Iceland about 5 minutes from where I live, and it's all about £1, £2 and £3 food and drink offers, and that's the first thing you see on the site. It's got some practical stuff. There's a practical weekly menu planner. There's a party invitation creator. Perhaps slightly non-PC, but there's a whole section on why mums go to Iceland. It's perhaps slightly stereotypical, but I guess if you are a mum going to Iceland, it's helpful. And then a fantastic piece about the Iceland story, the business story. Straight-talking commentary. Really,
it certainly doesn't pull any punches.
It doesn't, does it? No, it talks about the previous CEO and quotes the press. But it's what they would say offline, so if you were to meet them one-to-one. So I think it's very laudable that they're open, honest and real on-site. And it's certainly changed some of my perceptions of Iceland. So I think the sectors, and we can talk about some more later, of all the sectors, it's the retailers that absolutely fit. And I won't go into detail, but Tesco is exactly the same. If you ever shopped in Tesco, the online experience is very much in line with that bricks and mortar experience.
Mm. And do you think that because... particularly with a retailer where, you know, on its on the direct online shopping part of the site, mm-hmm. then you are looking to replicate that experience. But then if you've got your corporate site separate from that, yes. and potentially with a separate design,
yes, yes.
do you think that you should replicate that, or do you think you should, because you've got a slightly different audience?
Yes, you have, yes.
You know, slightly more serious subjects yes. about profitability, etc.
Sure, sure.
Might be joyous subjects, depending yes, on the situation. But would you carry, say, mirror it all the way through, or would you go slightly different tone?
I think if you're being true to the brand, the basic premise should be the same. So actually, Iceland's a good example of this. Mm. That, okay, he's talking about the performance of the business and their ethics and how they look after their employees, but it absolutely chimes with the rest of the site, or, mm. albeit you know, it's not as transactional. John Lewis is the same. When you look at the John Lewis partnership site, and indeed you look at the John Lewis Facebook page, and the John Lewis Facebook page, a lot of it's got consumers on, but it also has partners, who of course are, in John Lewis's case, are the shareholders of the organisation. So it's got partners making comments about the business in a very open way. So there's less differentiation between the consumer face and the, let's call it the business-to-business face. And I think companies can afford to be a bit braver, because people who shop in... I don't know, Sainsbury's, for example, are also shareholders and analysts, and we don't necessarily have these sharp divisions in our lives. I think the messaging can be slightly different, and I think there may be some subtleties in the tone of voice, but I think those organisations, and of course it's much easier if you're a private company and you're run by a single CEO who has a strong sense, and you know, you see that with a number of you saw it with Richard Branson, you saw it with Stelios and EasyJet when he was there, a number of Anita Roddick when she was at a body shop, a number of founder owners, if you like. A, those brands tend to be really clear in their focus, because there's one person essentially guiding them. But also their tone of voice, whether they're talking to corporate audiences or consumer audiences, is pretty much the same. You know, Anita Roddick, she didn't always go down well, but she would talk to the city in the way that she would talk to anyone. Little harder when you're a more broadly based, a range of shareholders, you're a PLC. But I did look at some pure business-to-business sites of some very good companies. One was Rolls-Royce Engineering. That's the engineering firm, not the cars.
Key brand issue there.
Exactly. Then I looked at Melrose, sort of almost an investment site, but they do turnarounds in engineering, have been very successful in buying British engineering firms and adding value to them. And I also looked at one other, Invensys, that was it, another engineering company. Mm. And I found that a lot of the language is interchangeable. I mean, I got a clear idea of what they did and what made them different, but they tend to drop into management ease, and there was much less sense of what made these organisations different and appealing, much less use of social media. Okay, I understand why, you know, Rolls-Royce might not want to be on, think it relevant to be on Facebook, but they have, Rolls-Royce has 7,000 employees on LinkedIn, which you can access direct through LinkedIn, but no LinkedIn button on the website. So surely it'd be interesting to learn more about Rolls-Royce and its employees from looking at some of the profiles of these people and what they say, than a sort of page of corporate speak about our employees. You know, they give their all, they work hard, we're proud of them. The sort of platitudes you get on corporate sites and annual reports kind of doesn't get read, but go onto the Rolls-Royce on LinkedIn and there's 7,000 employees all around the world doing interesting things with points of view, etc. Mm. So I think, as you might expect, some of the corporate and the B2B sites are behind some of the more communicative consumer sites.
They've yet to break through that barrier.
Exactly.
And one of my clients actually was they've started tweeting, but under a generic tweet address for the company. Mm-hmm. And there are two of them that use it, and they found issues with because one of the spokespeople is very jokey and the other isn't.
Yes.
And therefore, depending on who you've got managing the Twitter account and doing the tweets, you'll get either a more or less jokey person.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And that consistency, I think, adds an additional challenge for people getting a consistent tone of voice for the company. But ultimately, we still want to know they're all human and personal.
Absolutely. And I think John Lewis is very good at this. The Tesco, both Twitter and Facebook site, is very good. Fascinating and probably not to be... probably no surprise is on the Ryanair site there is no social media buttons of any type.
That would cost money.
It would cost money. And you go on to Ryanair on Facebook, and yeah, sure, there's a lot of comments, but it clearly hasn't been set up by Ryanair, so it's just a stream. No, it's probably about 90% sort of invective, and then the other 10%. Happy customers, but there is no intervention by anyone from Ryanair because, as you say, that would cost money. But actually, that's what I'd expect from the Ryanair brand. I mean, you know, Riley's very honest about it. You take it or leave it. What's interesting is with Ryanair is people have taken it because you go onto their website and every year they grow their customer numbers by huge amounts. So they're a growing and successful business. It goes against all the guidelines and the best practice in customer service, but I wouldn't expect Ryanair to have a moderated or any sort of social media with an intervention, because they're all about paring costs right down so you can fly to Alicante for 10 quid. So it is actually on brand, that behaviour. It's just not what makes me particularly comfortable.
And what are the sort of things that you think don't work?
Yes, I mean, I think the... I think the absence of social media is a bit of a no-no. I think corporate puffery and management speak, which we've touched on, you just gloss over it.
I particularly find that frustrating, where I go make the effort to go to a page and it tells me nothing.
Yes, and I think and you kind of it kind of is brochureware,
or you know, it's the sort of generic stuff that could apply to absolutely anyone,
absolutely.
Any company, and gives you no
absolutely
distinction of it being that company.
And I think financial services firms and many sort of business-to-business firms, and dare I say, even communications firms and ad agencies and PR firms can be guilty of this, which is ironic given it's their business. I think it's some of the consumer firms that are best. Anything clearly that doesn't work, now that's much less of an issue now. Particularly with, you know, super fast broadband and better technology, but anything that doesn't work. I think one interesting thing is that, and it's just a sort of trend, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes, is 10 years ago, most websites were brochureware, and there'd be a big use of flash, there was lots of animation, you know, typically you'd have to wait while something loaded, and it would be... it would be quite image conscious, actually, to the frustration of people, because it was more like a sort of advertisement online. Most organisations now, particularly customer facing ones, have moved much more to a transactional functional model. And I was sort of musing on this yesterday, and I think partly it's because the most successful web-only brands, or digital brands, if you like, have indeed been founded on a function. So whether that's Amazon or eBay or Facebook or Google or LinkedIn or Skype, if you call that a digital brand, they've all made their names. Groupon, if you think that's going to go anywhere, I'm not sure it will. But they've all made their names through actually pretty functional-based brands.
Yeah,
Not by being flashy. Not really on image. It's what it does. So it's interesting when you go on British Airways' site now, which used to be quite flashy, it is essentially the homepage is a functional site. It's where you can book flights and see flight availability, etc., etc. The same with Virgin. Of course, what that means is British Airways and Virgin's homepage, other than the name and the colours, are very much similar because they're probably using the same back-end technology for the booking systems. So I just wonder if that trend's gone too far, and that perhaps it's what the customers want, and that not enough of the brand comes through in the experience.
But that mentioning British Airways, I think, is an excellent example where, because of the merger with Iberia, you then look at the international airlines group
yes,
site.
Yes, IAG, yeah.
Which is very lacks personality.
Yes, yeah.
Is you know, very neat and tidy,
yes,
but
yes.
is pretty thin
yes.
in terms of level of information, and is certainly not uplifting.
No.
And is not, it doesn't leave you in any way with any memorable level
no.
of experience.
No.
And given that they were so, British Airways certainly were so focused on brand before when they were independent, it's interesting that they
yes.
have not focused on that.
Yes,
and still will in part direct people to the individual sites.
Absolutely, to Iberia.
But I think it's, you can assume that the corporate site and providing the corporate information of investor relations information and so on is just a leveller.
Yes.
And is, you just make sure everyone's got the same information and then you can say
yes.
you comply with
yes.
disclosure.
Yeah.
But you're missing a trick, I think, because you're not reinforcing that story. You're not saying, okay, what is this new
no.
international airlines group about?
No, absolutely.
Which flavour is going to dominate of
absolutely.
Which brand?
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And how will that play out? So there's no telling of the overall story. There's no emotional engagement and so on.
No, and I think that's a very good example. And I did look at IAG. You know, there is a, as you say, you can click through to BA. BA itself, the BA site itself, I don't think captures the current to fly to serve campaign idea positioning. I mean, you'll find it somewhere on there, but it's kind of hidden away. So, but I absolutely agree, the IAG site, I mean, actually almost has the feel of an interim site that was put there post the merger and nothing's happened to
We've
it.
We've got to get something up quickly.
Exactly.
Here
exactly,
it is.
Yes. And I think the... But you make a very good point. Ryanair, on the other hand, love them or hate them, again, perhaps easy because of the... you've got one dominant character. It is a one-brand organisation. The corporate information on Ryanair is all about... You know, there's a whole load of pictures of... O'Reilly complaining at various airports where they put the taxes up, you know, and it's a rail against all the things he wants to rail against. It's a rail against the EU, and that is the, you know, that's the corporate area. But at least there is a, you know, that tone of voice is in line with the way you hear him on the radio or you read about on the press, and there's no attempt to sanitize. Now, again, I suspect if you're a more, you know, you've got a broader shareholding and you're trying to satisfy the city and city shareholders, you need to be a little bit more measured. But I think a little bit more of the, sometimes the individuals and the corporate personality can come through without the, I just think sometimes website content is just overly controlled and you end up with something that is, as you sort of pointed out, it's kind of bland and... you don't notice the difference between one company and another.
No. You could never accuse Ryanair or Iceland of not having personality in
no,
terms of
no.
their sites.
And I think, no, I'm probably picked a couple of almost extreme examples to make the point.
But I think, you know, in other cases, so for instance, Rolls-Royce, getting the, it's all about engineering pride and fantastic products and
yes.
quality and history and, but you know, it's, and that is, an emotion that you do want to bring
yes.
out,
yes,
and show runs through the core of the culture and the company. You know?
Yes, and I think they do that to some extent. The next question might be, well, how do they do that? I think that's tough in a digital environment. I mean, I think looking at the Rolls-Royce site, they could make better and more impactful use of. Video, for example, and sound.
Although the corporate video is fantastic. They've always
yes.
made excellent
yes.
corporate videos.
Yeah. I mean, I was looking at, I don't know if Rolls-Royce were involved in
the Dreamliner.
In the Dreamliner, indeed. I've just seen that 20-25% of the components are made in the UK. If they are, then I just think, you know, let's close down the homepage. Let's just have that. The whole first page you visit is it's a full screen of the Dreamliner.
A big ta-da!
Exactly. Brilliant. Yeah. And okay. It only has to be like that for a week or two. But I think a lot of these corporate sites, they're kind of, okay, they have their news updated and they've got their tickers, etc. But you don't get a sense they're being actively managed for an audience. You get the sense that they are, they're probably someone's responsibility, but people aren't actively thinking, how can we make more of this on a sort of daily, weekly basis?
But I think maybe that's a, you know, by coming at the corporate site from, you know, investor needs, and there's a standard way of doing things that everyone expects to do things. And I think so that paradigm hasn't been challenged perhaps as much as it could be compared, say, to the retailers.
Yes, no, I think that's absolutely right. And of course the retailers, perhaps the other difference is the retailers will argue that they put more time, effort and people into their site because they're doing X percentage of business through it. The likes of Rolls-Royce will not be doing business through their site. Clearly, it will influence investor audiences and other stakeholders, but...
it's their salesmen on the ground that are doing the deals.
Exactly right, yeah.
But now, what I do see is more innovative use of those top images on the homepage.
Yes.
In terms of either storytelling. Yes. So if you look at the Syngenta site, where you have five major stories that are being told about the sort of issues that they're tackling, and immediately lifts you to thinking, wow, they're tackling... You know, clearly, you recognise the hugeness of the issues that they talk about. The choices that they offer, of which one is a no-brainer yes and one is a no-brainer no, and then talk about how they are tackling that one. And then it goes on into the next sequence, and you've got moving text that engages you, and as a storytelling mechanism is excellent.
Yes.
So I think we will see better use of homepage estate and so on, because that is really... You know, you set the tone for the whole website.
Yes, absolutely.
And if you can start raising people up to say, so at the end of the first page, you're coming away saying, thank God for this company.
Yes.
Or are feeling positive about it.
Absolutely.
You interpret everything else that you read.
Absolutely.
In that light.
No, very much so. And just, you were asking about don'ts earlier. I was actually looking at the Invensys site. They had a rebrand a year or two ago. On the upside, it is very visual, and it's quite visually arresting, and it's very modern, however you want to define that. And they do have their values on the site: their agility, innovation, integrity, courage, and meritocracy. And the expression is reasonably courageous, but innovation is one of the values. And I contrasted that with, on the homepage, there's a link to... It actually says links, and there's a list of about 15 PDFs. And you know, for an organisation that's about technology and innovation, you know, I don't want to have to... If I was interested in all 20, I'd have to... You know, that's 20 clicks waiting for the PDF to open and read. You would expect that content to be part of the normal website.
Young generation would lose the will to live before getting beyond two.
Absolutely. And another, don't... You know, You'd think it was obvious, but there's firms that are doing it. Again, not to pick on Invensys, but their visual identity, two of their colours are lime green and light grey, and that type appears on the white background of the website, and I struggle to read it, which again, for an engineering firm, which is also around, you know, getting things right, it's kind of a basic, and it's those sort of things that just need to be got right at the beginning.
Mm. So let's also talk about timing, given that, you know, we are going through turbulent times.
Mm.
And there might be some stakeholders who, if they see a rebrand, assume that it costs loads of money.
Yes, yeah.
And a new brand interpretation, and from the company's marketing department point of view, establishing and strengthening the brand may be a very good thing to do, but other people might say, well, why are you spending all this money this time? So my next question is about timing, and are there good times to do it, or should you just, you know, if you're not expressing it strongly enough, should you just go ahead and do it no matter what? And should you temper your approach, do you think, in light of current circumstances?
Yes, I mean, I think it's a very good question. I think what's interesting, actually, in the last year, is the number of organisations that have looked at their branding has got up exponentially. I mean, organisations did just, and I'm talking about UK and wider Europe, organisations did stop doing this in the during the credit crunch for the first sort of couple of years. But even though, you know, the economic and financial news is not great just now, firms have been investing a lot in the last year, and in fact, the sort of the branding business has been very busy. I think the reason for that is that a there's a sort of a backup, if you like, a backlog of organisations wanting to look at their brand. But also, firms have realised that it's also a period of change, and the time to look at your brand is when your market is changing dramatically, when the organisation is changing dramatically, or in particular, when your brand is out of sync with the business strategy and out of sync with consumers. And it can get to the point where if your brand expression and your brand is out of sync with any one of those, is actually doing you damage online, because it's saying one thing and that's not reflecting the reality of the organisation. And why would any organisation want to do that? So I would counsel against sort of spurious image making, or let's say superficial makeovers of websites or tinkering. But I think when an organisation has proper strategic change, you know, British Airways would be a good example of an organisation that's had a tough 3 or 4 years. It has decided to, clearly it's now part of EAHG, it's decided to invest and differentiate itself from some of the budget airlines. To fly to serve is all about that, the customer service, the commitment to flying. There's some lovely sort of case studies of things they've done about looking after dangerous chemicals and animals and when they're flying and this sort of thing. So it's all around the added value of British Airways. For the website not to reflect that would be a mistake and could actually sort of cost money, because you would continue to perceive them as the organisation they were 3 or 4 years ago. Of course, to fly to serve has also got a big staff message, because BA's had all these issues with its employees over the last 3 or 4 years. So there's also a staff pride issue. So it makes absolute sense, and I would urge BA to go further for the website to reflect to that. Do you take a slightly different approach because there's a downturn? Only insofar as your business, you take a different approach to your business. I mean, the purpose of brand is to reflect the business strategy. So if you are, you know, if you've got an aggressive growth strategy, even in a downturn, then you know, the brand must reflect that. I don't think there's customers, they don't want to see money wasted, but they also want their brands to be confident and have a good sense of self.
And of course, you may have a different brand perception in different geographies. So UK and Europe, we may be familiar with the major brands that we know and love, and yet if they're trying to establish themselves in Asia, developing markets and so on, then there's a stronger case for establishing or making more of the brand, particularly in the primary shop window, which is now the corporate website.
Absolutely, and I think the a lot of the companies we've mentioned, you know, their growth has come from the BRIC countries and other emerging and developing markets, and particularly Asia. And as we know, websites, there's no boundaries to the accessing a website. So yes, I think sort of just following, calibrating your website to one particular market could be a big mistake. You know, I was looking at Jaguar's website, which I think is pretty good. I mean, the product is very much the hero, just like Apple, the product is very much the hero. I think, again, I think with video you could probably get more of the product portfolio over. But clearly someone like Jaguar, big market in the States, big market in the Middle East, big market in Asia, that's really where this website is pointed, if you will.
And it may be that some of those areas, even America, don't have that great broadband.
Very and true,
so,
yes.
And so we had one... one of our US reviewers marked a FTSE 100 site very lowly, and they then came back and asked us about it. And in fact, the root cause of the bad experience and was about speed of... They'd put some flash elements on the site, and the speed of download was bad and poor, and so the user experience was terrible.
Yes.
But of course, they didn't realise that.
No.
Because they're sitting in the UK, in London, a nice bit of broadband, and everything's fine.
Yeah.
It's very easy to just go ahead and assume everything's fine from that point of view. And if you get the user experience wrong, or if design trumps usability...
Absolutely, yes.
Then you really come a cropper.
Yeah.
And you may not realise it, because you may be patting yourself on the back for all your marvellously designed site, when actually your users are not having that great time.
But very good point,
So let's move on to social media, and because I think is a very interesting area where instead of a single dimension of communication of just push, you're now interacting, and therefore that's an extra dimension on your tone of voice or how you express yourself and so on. So what do you think are there right and wrong ways that you counsel people to do that, or which tools to use and so on?
Yes, I mean, I think the first thing is to embrace it. I think, you know, we talked about some organisations that they're always still pretending it's not there, and it is, and people will be talking about your brand on it. Okay, Ryanair have decided not to engage in the Ryanair Facebook site, but that's, you know... That's fine. That's their approach. At least they've done that deliberately, and I think at least they have a strategy, which is not to waste money and time engaging, or what they see as a waste. But I think a lot of organisations still don't quite know how to deal with it, and it is tough because I was on the John Lewis Facebook site this morning, and there's lots of positive stuff, but there's also customers complaining, and they have... I don't know what they call them, moderators, but they have some staff who are actively and very sort of in a very timely manner are commenting on some of the complaints. So, you know, I can't find these boots at £29. Within 2 minutes, you'll find a John Lewis partner commenting on that. And then, you know, you can get a little bit sort of scratchy because it's not a face-to-face conversation. But the likes of particularly the retailers, John Lewis, Tesco, etc., A, they've realised you kind of have to engage, and B, they're using it positively. So you'll find, you know, at the moment on both sites, you'll find all sorts of Halloween offers and Halloween discussions. They're using it proactively. I think I have a personal view that I think social media is probably slightly overrated, and I think it's gone through a boom time, and I think, like so many things, it'll settle down to find its natural place. But I think it is odd if you're a large organisation and you don't have a LinkedIn page. If you're a business or a corporate organisation, it's more likely to be LinkedIn than Facebook. But it still surprises me that, in fact, I was working with an organisation earlier this year where one of their main products was a digital product. And yet half the board weren't on LinkedIn. And I'm just thinking, well, it doesn't show them as part of the world in which that they're, you know,
the way
the company's operating. Exactly.
Yeah.
The tough thing about social media is how to behave on it. And if you've been used to very sort of rigid corporate guidelines about how you speak and communicate, what do you do when you've suddenly got, as in Rolls-Royce case, 7,000 staff on LinkedIn, all of whom may post something occasionally and will, you know, update their profiles, etc., etc. The fact is, you can't actively control it. And those firms that really have strong brands and a sense of brand, the people will do the right thing. So, you know, you can't imagine there's too many Apple employees that won't be supportive of Apple online. In fact, they tend to be evangelists and product evangelists themselves. And the same with
Same with Microsoft as well. I mean, they have really sort of empowered their employees to blog, saying, please do.
And
these, you know, you're all grown ups, these are the guidelines.
Absolutely.
You know, don't say anything your granny would be embarrassed about, or we would, or you'd be embarrassed about.
Absolutely. And I think that is the only way to go. If you know, if someone is bad mouthing the company they work for in public, then you know that's a different sort of issue. Of course, there's always, you know, social media is only an amplification of what always went on. You know, 20 years ago, it might be you and some friends down a pub talking about the organisation you work for. It's just that didn't get the wider broadcast, if you like.
The red line hadn't gone global at
exactly,
that point.
Exactly, exactly. Right. and that's all social. That's not all social media is, because many more people can partake in it. But it just gives you a much wider exposure. But I think organisations do need to embrace it. I don't think anyone fully understands the effects to date. But if you're not taking part in the sort of social media explosion, then you never will understand them. I can understand it's scary when it's not the old controlled model of, you know, we'll put a press release out, it might appear in the FT, we'll brief the journalist, take him or her to lunch, and we're kind of assured of a decent piece. You know, so it's a very different world to that.
But there are equivalents. So, you know, to make sure that your A-list, what I would say, your A-list press release, or the story that you actually really do want to invest time in, making sure that it has got the interesting and shareable elements,
yes.
So whether it's attached images or embedded video or so on, those things we know from studies go further, get shared more and so on.
Absolutely.
Courting the right set of bloggers.
Absolutely.
As opposed to just the traditional journalists.
Absolutely.
And as exercises that we've seen where people have involved us, Sainsbury's and the like, on certain areas, we've seen incredible results from people treating bloggers with respect.
Yes.
And the sort of scale of buzz that then gets created from that, and all of it generally positive.
Absolutely.
So I think there's a whole set of new rules.
Yes.
For PR departments to learn. I think
Absolutely.
They have to embrace social media, understand its use, mm-hmm. and how to leverage that.
Yes.
And a new set of empowered communicators who are out there commenting on
Absolutely.
On the business.
And I've got a very good example just to build on that, was Green King who've obviously acquired a lot of brewers around the country and have actually consolidated a lot of the brewery operations at their place in Bury St Edmunds. And we're getting a lot of criticism from camera, and in particular a blogger whose name I won't remember now, but he's one of the main beer bloggers.
Mm.
Very critical of Green King, and I think he termed them, you know, GK stands actually for Greedy King because of their ways that they've been acquiring these brewers. They engaged with him. They took him on a tour of the Bury St Edmunds brewery. They showed how actually a lot of the individual ways the acquired beers are brewed are still in a customised form, albeit it's at one place, not 20 different places around the country. And I remember reading his blog on, and he talked about that visit, and he talked about his experience, and actually said, my views of Green King have changed. And you just see in his tone, I mean, he's still critical of some things, but the change of his tone
he sees
is quite marked
and
because
understands.
He's been engaged. And I think that would be a very good example of exactly what you were saying. Whereas if Green King had continued to ignore him, they would still be getting, you know, commentary which perhaps is not as accurate as they would have liked.
And people do get turned off. I mean, people's attention spans on the web and the way their opinions are formed is much shorter nowadays. And because they've got so many information sources and so much going on, they've only got a little bit of time to pick up.
Absolutely. And it was interesting when I was looking at some of these sites yesterday, I was thinking, and it's often the same when you sort of look through annual reports professionally, how many other people have genuinely read all the pages on this website? And you know, people, as you say, people just don't have time, particularly if they're accessing the website. We haven't talked about it a lot, but on mobile applications, through on their BlackBerry or their phone or whatever, you know, they're just not going to go through a whole ream of of different content.
Particularly if each page takes 30 seconds to load.
Exactly, exactly.
Because I think there's a risk, going on to mobile now, there is a risk that because with your iPhone and your BlackBerry, that you can actually now, in general, more sites are compatible with those phones and with the smartphones. And therefore, you could say, look, here's our website, it's small and you can zoom in, therefore, that's fine, isn't it? Mm. And the answer is, no, it's not. Partly because the user experience is so poor.
Yes.
But secondly, because Google actually rates, if you build a mobile optimized site, Google will, and if it's accessed from a mobile, it will rank through its search the mobile optimized site higher than the other ones. And therefore, you will get a higher visibility. Mm-hmm. You will get a better share of voice. Mm-hmm. If you actually take the effort to do that.
Right.
Now, given that we've seen, obviously, some mobile-optimized sites, how do you go about expressing the brand when you've got less to play with there?
Yes, and I think that is... in some ways, I think that can be a positive, because I think some of the sites we've talked about, you're forced not to use long paragraphs of corporate speak on a mobile site, so getting to the point more quickly.
They could learn from, actually.
Exactly. I mean, it is that old less is more, and you know, if you can get the American Constitution on one page of paper and the Ten Commandments on one page of paper, etc., then why can't you get the key points about an organisation on X number of mobile app pages? So actually, I think it helps focus the mind, and could actually be an aid to getting a stronger brand presence online.
I mean, initially the focus has been partly in because of the companies who provide the tools and so on to provide the share price, the mini chart, the news access, and maybe the events. So things that are reasonably, I guess, press releases aside,
are factual, a statement of fact.
But with the press releases are key sets of information that you need to let people know that you've done certain things. But I would be interested to see if people start trying to tell the story through the mobile site a little bit better. And as you say, in much clearer, simpler forms, simple diagrams.
When
I look at websites where you've got much better highlighting of information, Marks and Spencer's has got key large font figures of its key results
at
the top of the results page.
Yeah.
Unilever is very good at highlighting summary facts at the top of each section. I love the way that's designed.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, people have got to get used to the idea of highlighting their information and helping people absorb it.
Sure. No.
Otherwise, you know, too much information and you're dead.
Absolutely.
Agree. So to kind of tie the conversation up, then what are your favourite sites or the ones that you kind of look at and really go, that really impresses me in terms of how they have expressed themselves?
Yes, I mean, I think we've mentioned two or three of them. I think that those retailers, and I deliberately looked at three different retailers, John Lewis, Iceland, and to some extent Tesco, I think were spot on. I looked at some car companies as well, and I really like Smart Car. Again, an organisation with a real strong sense of brand and differentiation. You know, you can spot a Smart Car a mile off.
Well, they were very fashion-oriented from the start, weren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. The site's a bit quirky, which is exactly what you'd expect given the cars. Very good use of video. Quite an entertaining video on minimising petrol use on environmentally friendly sort of driving styles, if you like. It's what you'd expect from knowing the brand and the product. Although one slight, it may have been my misuse, but there was a web survey that popped up halfway through in German, which threw me a little bit. I've talked about John Lewis, which I thought was excellent, and I think the Iceland we've talked about as well. I think the, you know, not so much corporate sites, but it also comes back to what I was saying about, you know, the most successful web brands, if you like, have been these functional brands, you know, and time and time again, you know, the Amazons and the eBays and the Facebooks. Okay, you get some criticism when some of the functionality has changed, but they set the standard for online experiences, if nothing else. What is lacking, I think, and I can't really think of a site, although I was doing some research for another project the other day, and this would be the closest, which is quintessentially the sort of premium concierge service aimed at very high net worth individuals. I think what's lacking is some of what I used to criticise in the past as brochureware, sites which do give you a sort of feast of visual experience, and are more than transactional sites, and you get a real sense of a brand experience, if you like. And there aren't that many of those, and I just think there is an opportunity for, you know, for better use of sound and video and colour and pacing, and also, you know, some things that, you know, people more creative than me can come up with.
So ultimately, what you would like to see is people giving that full emotional connection, that full expression.
Mm, yes, yes.
How far do you think people could take it?
I mean, when you look at the emotional engagement that is achieved through cinema, through television, and obviously there's convergence between television and you know, television in effect is an online presence. There is convergence there. But when you look at what television and cinema achieve in emotional connections through visual and sound stimuli, I think there's quite a way for websites to go. Whilst not perhaps stepping into the mistakes of the past where you do end up with imageware that just irritates. I mean, there is still a need for, I don't know what the figure is, you may well, but, you know, X percentage of websites are only accessed because someone suddenly wants the address or the phone number because they're on a way there, and you don't want to go through 5 minutes of film if you're looking for the address. So there needs to be a balance, but I think there's quite a way to go. Perhaps something could be learned from games, you know, some of the visual and verbal quality, sound quality, oral quality on computer games. Perhaps more of that could be brought into the websites for those brands where it merits it. So I'm not, you know, this is not for Amazon or LinkedIn or Facebook, but those, you know, perhaps a little bit of Jaguar, technical access challenges notwithstanding. You made a good point about broadband access, but if those can be overcome, then perhaps something can be learned from some other, what in effect are digital disciplines.
So finally, as a result of some of these brand exercise projects and the many that you've done, have there been the sort of positive feedback from the clients in terms of what they would see as ROI from improving how they are online?
Yes.
I mean, I know it's a whole extra, a whole huge discourse we could do on this, but in terms of the sort of short punchline.
Yes, I think one thing about, as you know, I'm a branding person with an interest in digital rather than a digital expert, but I think the actually it's the digital piece of a rebrand that can be most easily measured, and generally that tends to be the piece that's positive. Now whether you measure that in engagement through things like page hits, or whether you actually measure it through sales if you're selling through the site, or whether you measure it through online surveys or perhaps even more effectively offline surveys, I think generally it's the digital part of a rebrand that seemed to have offered the most value. And I think that is one thing about the digital world. It is more measurable. You know, I've put projects in for rebranding wards in the past, and it's very hard if an organisation changes its, updates its brand and changes its brand expression to overall measure the impact of that. The bit you can measure is the digital, the digital element. Yeah.
And so those that have done it would swear by it.
Yes, I mean, I think the, I mean, it's a tangible element of a rebrand. So you can see it immediately. They tend to be, you know, it tends to get positive feedback, if only because you're bringing the brand into line with the business and the brand expression. So I think, yes, I think it's certainly a positive thing to do. But I'd also say, as I mentioned earlier, you know, don't just update the website because you think you need a sort of image makeover. It needs to be founded in the organisational change and the organisation's values and personality. And the best websites, as we've discussed, are those that just seamlessly seem to fit with the organisation. You know, coming back to them again, but you know, Ryanair and John Lewis and Iceland just seem right for those organisations. And I think if you try and force it, and there is a disparity between the website and the business/brand, then something's wrong.
That's a great note to finish on. Adrian, thank you very much for your time.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.